This episode is sponsored by Xcel Energy. Xcel Energy is dedicated to providing 100% carbon-free energy by 2050, but they can't do it alone. They need your help. Join Xcel Energy and you'll find a purpose-driven career, solid job security, and challenging work. Xcel Energy knows the value your military service brings to the workplace. It's an exciting time to be in the energy industry. Whether you're on active duty, transitioning, or already embarking on your civilian career, learn about the opportunities with one of America's leading utilities, Xcel Energy, at xcelenergy.com/military. Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and my goal is to help members of the military community succeed in their post-service career. Today's episode number 328, Struggle is What Gives Us Value, with Micah Fink at Heroes and Horses.
On September 11th, I was on a telephone pole in Queens, New York, and I was there when the Citibank Tower fell at the World Trade Centers. I was buried for hours. I pulled a dead police officer out of there, and that moment right there fundamentally changed and redirected the course of my life. So I look at all these things I've been able to do, and I really think I look back at my childhood, and I never was. I wasn't a high school superstar. I wasn't a popular kid in school or any of those things. And that experience right there, really helped me learn who I was. And then from there, I started making decisions that ultimately put me in this chair today talking to you.
If you listen to my conversation with Stacey Baer or my recent conversation with Dan Knossen, if you like the flavor of those conversations, you'll love this episode. I shut up as much as possible during my time with Micah. He is a force to be reckoned with. He had a thriving career until 9/11, where he was in New York when the towers fell. He ran into the towers, dragging out whoever he could, and swore in that moment to kill whoever was responsible. He went on to become an Army Ranger. Just kidding, he wanted to, but he ran into a Navy recruiter instead, so he enlisted and became a Navy SEAL. After 10 years as a Navy SEAL and 4 years as a paramedic, he moved to Montana. Wackiness ensued. It led him to start a nonprofit called Heroes and Horses, and I'm betting money that you will donate to this organization before the episode is over. It's incredible. In the show notes, we have a link to Micah's TEDx talk. In it, Micah talks about how important struggle is. This is something he learned in his over 1,100 days, 13 deployments in which he was deployed to combat zones, but even more so when he returned. We talk about Micah's struggles and how we're doing that to the veteran community by often coddling them, doing the work for them, prescribing them medications, trying to keep them from the very pain that can help heal them. And so Micah and his team take a very different approach. They take over 30 veterans every year into the wilderness for over 40 days and 40 nights, where they face austerity and challenge. They have water, coffee, meat and veggies, and not a whole lot else. They ride 400 to 500 miles on horses. They learn to shoe horses. They take philosophy courses. They wake up at 4 a.m. to work out and work all day until 10 p.m. to provide the tools so that each individual can suffer and mine the depths of who they are. Strap in for an energizing ride. Check out the show notes at beyondtheuniform.org. And please consider donating to Heroes and Horses at heroesandhorses.org. So with that, let's dive in to my conversation with Micah.
Dive.
Joining me today in Manhattan, Montana, my guest is Micah Fink. Micah, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Thanks so much, Justin. Appreciate you having me on.
Special thanks to Seth Jordan, who made this intro. I want to give listeners a quick background on Micah. He is the CEO of Heroes and Horses, where for the last 5 years, he has offered combat veterans an alternative solution for defining and approaching their physical and mental scars, a solution that does not include the overprescribing of medication or traditional psychotherapy, but rather the opportunity and tools to redefine their purpose, rediscover their inner strength, engage in a practice of self-responsibility, and maximize their potential. He started out in the Navy, where he served for 10 years as a Navy SEAL and 4 years in paramilitary service. Since then, he has also worked as a professional speaker for Free Matter, as well as the executive producer of the film 500 miles. And for listeners, as always, at beyondtheuniform.org, we'll have show notes. We've got a lot of great links to check out for Micah. In particular, I'd recommend we've got a YouTube link to one of the TED Talks that he gave that's definitely worth checking out. So Micah, maybe to start off, anything not in the bio that you want listeners to know before we start drilling in?
Yeah, I mean, I always like hear all these things that I've been fortunate enough to be involved in and goals and dreams I've been able to achieve. But I look back at my life and I laugh because, you know, I was just a small town kid from upstate New York, you know, a railroad family, and pretty poor when I was a kid. You know, we all lived in the same bedroom for the first couple of years. My parents were, you know, doing their house, and there's a pivotal point in my life. You know, I was playing in a ska band, had my own business. I was a lineman climbing telephone poles. And on September 11th, I was on a telephone pole in Queens, New York. And I was there when the Citibank Tower fell at the World Trade Centers. I was buried for hours. I pulled a dead police officer out of there. And that moment right there fundamentally changed and redirected the course of my life. So I look at all these things I've been able to do, and I really think I look back at my childhood, and I never was, you know, I wasn't a high school superstar. I wasn't a popular kid in school or any of those things. And and that experience right there, you know, really helped me learn who I was. And then from there, I started making decisions that ultimately put me in this chair today talking to you. Mm.
I think that's incredible. I mean, it's so many of the guests I have on kind of went high school to military, or kind of high school, college to military. And then to see the few examples of someone who was very content and happy in the life that they had, and then was prompted and called into service out of a, you know, I'm not trying to minimize anyone, but it's like, it feels like a real sense of generosity, of service, of choosing to answer that call. And that's, I'm imagining I'm just guessing that that's a thread that's run through your career and the work that you do now, of, you know, going where you feel led, or going where you feel like you can have an impact. And it might not always be what you had envisioned. What is the most safe? What is the best for you personally? And yet it's what you know is right for the situation.
Yeah, I think if I had to look back and identify one quality that I always had, it was that I never wanted to be a victim. I never wanted to let something happen to me, and that was, I didn't have any choices, and I became the victim of a circumstance. And that circumstance or that situation defined who I would become later in my life. And I wasn't that complicated of a thought at the time in my life, but I was the type of person where I never took no for an answer. Matter of fact, I was telling a story the other day about this pickup truck that I got. It's a souped up 1975 Ford with a 429 Cobra jet in it or whatever. But I bought it out of this farmer's field, and I've been going by this truck for 5 years, and I stop and I knock on the guy's door, and the guy comes to the door, and he's very overweight. He's got a pit bull named Felon. He's got Confederate flag sheets. His belly's hanging out. And I said, "Hey, are you selling that truck?" He said, "No." You know, like, close the door. So I was like, so I knocked again. He opens his door up. He's like, "What?" And I was like, I'm interested in that truck. I'm not selling it. I was like, "All right." So the next day I came back, knocked on the door. I was like, "Hey, what's up? You sell?" He's like, "What do you want?" I was like, "I'll sell that truck." Like, he's like, "No." I was like, "All right." Well, the eighth time that I went back, he sold me the truck. And I didn't even know that it had a $25,000 motor or anything. He sold me this truck. And I'm only sharing that is because I was born, you know, I think it's just by nature as a relentless person. And so when I was sitting there at 9/11, I was there with my best friend, you know, I had pulled a dead police officer from underneath a car and found an arm. I had crawled inside the World Trade Center, which was crazy. There was steam blowing out. It was the most horrific scene I'd ever seen, even in war. It was absolute devastation. And I was sitting there with my friend, and his reaction was like, "What are we going to do?" And I looked at him and I said, "I'm going to kill whoever did this." Hmm. And he kind of like looked at me and kind of was like, "It's all right, bro. Like, you know, we'll get through this. And I meant that, because I just didn't accept what had happened. And I didn't know like what I was going to do. I was going to go find the guy, karate chop him. I didn't really know what I was going to do. But I think that we all have those moments in our life. We all have those opportunities for resiliency. We all have the opportunity to gain insight in the face of adversity in our life. And we miss out on that opportunity. We become the victim of the circumstance. You know, we could have ran into the building. We could have pulled the people out. We could have done something. We could have stopped the guy from beating the lady, but we didn't, right? And we missed our opportunity. And that stays with us. And those become trends in our life. And then there's a point where you can't get away. And then people, that's when you really see people become victims. So I think that was something for me going into the SEAL teams. I never wanted to be a Navy SEAL. I didn't know what the Navy SEALs were. It wasn't like all cool guy stuff and, you know, Instagram and night vision. Like I was trying to join the Army, and the Navy guy came out and he just came up to me and said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "I want to be an Army Ranger." And I said, he said, "Why do you want to do that?" And I said, "Because I want to be the best." And he said, "They're not the best." So for all you Army Rangers listening, I didn't say that. I'm just saying, even though we are the best. But anyway, so I'm just joking. I love my Rangers. But there's a he takes me in there, he shows me this VHS. We start watching this VHS, and it's like, you know, Vietnam dudes covered in swamp, you know, wearing woodland camis. I was like, "Whoa, man, that's like pretty intense." He's like, "You want to do that?" And I was like, "Yeah." He's like, "It's, you just sign up. I'll give you a contract." I was like, "Great." Like, cool. Mm-hmm. So I just like had no idea that like no one made it. People die in training. And it was like this like super hard thing. So I'm just like, "Yeah, cool. I'm gonna be like be a Navy SEAL. Like I sign up, I go through stuff, I'll head down to like Barnes and Nobles after I get done with the maps." And I'm like, "Navy SEALs, huh?" So I like get some books, and I was like, "I can't even swim." like I mean, I was like, it was and so yeah, and long story short, I mean, I ended up, you know, going to Buds, getting selected. And one thing that I always knew was that I was tough, and that I was a smart kid, and I was tough. I didn't have an easy life, and I just would look at the instructors and all these guys, because everyone had muscles, that, you know, college quarterbacks, guys that had played in the NHL, like guys that had been played, you know, pro baseball. I mean, people had muscles coming out of their ears. I was like, everyone looked like just, I felt so out of place. But one thing I knew was that I was just tough. And I just looked at all these, you know, guys there, and I said, well, if they're Navy SEALs, then I'm going to become one, because if they can do it, then they're not tougher than I am. And so, you know, that really started my career in special operations. And you know, I served 10 years active and reserves. And then, matter of fact, I'm still in the reserves, and ended up getting recruited over to the paramilitary side of the house. And I was a CIA contractor over there for almost 5 years. So, and for the most part, I loved every minute of it. It was pretty incredible. Got to do some incredible things. There's nothing that I didn't get to do that I really wanted to do. So, and more importantly, I was blessed to serve my country. I was honored to serve my country. I don't think anybody owes me anything. I owe myself. And I was really, really, really humbled by the men that I got to serve around. Really, like, to be in amongst giants, really. And I felt really humbled to stand alongside some really incredible people that most people will never know the names of. So
I love so much about what you're saying. I want to go back to this sense of, like, you know, we all have these moments in life, and, you know, the sense I have is we have an instant to make decisions in those moments, whether to lean in and go forward with them or to let them pass us by. And I just want to acknowledge the character that you have, that in those moments you took action. In those moments you ran into the towers. In those moments you didn't just let this be a story you're telling at a bar, but it prompted you to sign up for the military. In that moment you answered the call of the Navy rather than going down the path that you had laid out. And I
had the privilege of working with General John Allen at the Naval Academy, one of the most incredible men I ever met. And the sense I got from him is the actions we take in a day-to-day basis, the actions that we take when no one is looking, when we're getting up at 5 a.m. to exercise, when we are speaking up at a restaurant, you know, just the tiny things we do string together to build that muscle so that when we have the opportunity to stand up, when we have the opportunity in these greater moments that could define us as a person, it's not what happens in the moment. It's all the thousands of things we've done leading up to it that lead to that knee-jerk reaction. So first, I just wanted to name Micah and honor the part of you that I imagine was doing the right thing in isolation for so long. And now, largely earned, you are in the public spotlight, but I'm just guessing the decades that have gone into making you that man who could endure, making you that man who was tough to go through these challenges, that's not something that happened instantaneously. And that's, you know, the product of your parents and all of these things that went into who you are. And I just wanted to name that before we go forward.
Yeah. I think, I said something to the guys that started the Heroes and Horses season this year. I said, in this program, you learn something that you should have learned in the beginning of your life, and that is learning to fail better. Mm. We just become better at failing. And they're different failures. They're failures, but you'll become better at them. And it was so many times, like, we just – for all intents and purposes, I had a pretty tough – like, my younger years were very real tough, you know. I remember as a kid, like, you know, always going to the food bank. I remember, like, you know, having government cheese. And I remember, like, you know, my parents, like, just getting by, and we're all living in the same bedroom while our house isn't even livable. And then, you know, watching my parents work and build something from the ground up set an example for me. Matter of fact, the last time that I ever received a bicycle, my birthday, I think I was 12. And I purchased it for everything for the rest of my life. Mm. You know, so I really learned how to, like, and I never looked at other kids and thought, like, ooh, I wish I had that. I wish I had that. I would always be proud that I could work and I could go get whatever I wanted. And I think that, like, if I was to write it down, people would say, oh, you had it tough and this was tough and this was that. And I'm like, I feel sorry for the individual that's never faced adversities in their life. They don't realize that the adversities that come along are not there to break them, but to show them and teach them and empower them. But we become victims of circumstance so quickly and so easily. But everything that we read, everything that we learn about is never the story about, there was a kid. The kid was given $5 million by his dad. And then he, like, bought a bunch of stuff and then died. It's always the Abraham Lincolns. It's always the Muhammad Ali's, the guys rising from nothing, from poverty. And, like, we just gravitate towards these stories. And then when it comes our opportunity to pen down our story, here comes the challenge. Here comes the obstacle. I lost my leg or this happened. And now we become victims. And then that's where our story stops.
I think that's great. I love what you said about learning to fail better. And I'm having a veteran guest on in a couple of weeks, Bobby Herrera. I'm holding the book up for Micah, but he wrote a book called The Gift of Struggle. And that's awesome. The premise of the book is, like, hey, there is a gift there. And I was talking with someone, I just keep on thinking about this. I don't know the system of belief this comes from, but this person was saying, like, look, our souls before we're born, our souls choose, they see the life path before us and they choose that life path. And I've been thinking about that, of just, like, what a beautiful philosophy that any pain I face, I actually chose this. Like, this is here for a reason to make me into the man that I want to become. It's not the universe punishing me. It's not God smacking me down. It is the opportunity to tear muscle, to grow, to become stronger, to become the man that can overcome these obstacles before me. And I get it. I see people who have horrific upbringings and horrific life circumstances. It's not meant to mitigate that at all. And there is a gift in that. It's just a change in mindset. There is a potential gift in these things that can cause us to become stronger, even though they're unpleasant. We wouldn't really choose them if we were given the choice. There is a way to approach it. And I love the way that you're explaining it, approaching that with that dignity and grace.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember who told me, but a friend said to me, I was talking about my children, and he said, listen, children don't come from you. He said, children pass through you. Mm-hmm. And I realized, like, look at, I mean, my mom and dad are just really incredible people. They set an incredible example for me, and they overcame like so many hardships. And I think that's why I'm the person I am today. And I just, I continued that on. Matter of fact, I just laugh, you know, because I don't want my kids to be life to be too easy. You know, like I don't want it to, I don't want to set them up for failure. You know, like really we want to make it easier, but we in the end help people to death. I mean, look at having a tough childhood. I mean, I'm no kid that's were abused and were beaten. I mean, you read about Charlize Theron, like, you know, her dad murdered her, or they were home and murdered them, alcoholic, Roseanne Barr. Like you read about people. You go back, you know, Eleanor Roosevelt, you read about people who have really, truly, Margaret Thatcher, I mean, who have turned horrific experiences in their life into the building blocks that eventually were the foundation of the springboard that sent them into the stratosphere and is the reason why we're talking about them today. Hmm. So as hard as it is, and we don't want to minimize people's struggles, but life is trauma. Mm-hmm. You know, somebody says, oh, like you think you have like PTSD or anything like that. I'm like, I think everyone has PTSD. I'm like, yeah. Life is PTSD. Why do we even got to get a label? Oh, something bad happened? No, it's life. It's life. Yep. Well, you got PTSD because we want to give labels. We want to, you know, we want to create markets and then markets create trends. And then we begin treatments and books and this and that and medications and institutions all to, when it's really all the same thing all along. Mm-hmm. And so nobody's obstacles should be minimized. They're very difficult, but the obstacles in life are the way. And as a society, what we do is we don't shy away from obstacles. We just engage in them digitally. So we'll watch the 300-pound dude running the marathon, the dude doing the obstacle courses, the inspirational video of the dude dragging himself through the mud with one hand with a rope, or, you know, for vets or whatever the new thing is. We have you know, obstacle machines where we enter the obstacles into them, like, you know, 3.0 at 1% incline for 30 minutes. And then as soon as we're done, we pick up the phone, we call somebody and tell them that we just overcame an obstacle. We literally brag about it. It's like, hey, what's up, man? I just did a 2 Frans back to back. What you're really saying is like, hey, man, I just did 2 obstacles. And people are like, whoa. Right? Because wow, I just ran a marathon. We spray paint lines on a road that at 364 days of the year, you could go and run on. But this particular day, you have to pay $125 and you run from the same exact lane on the same exact public road to the other side. And somewhere along the way, it's going to get tough.
Yeah.
Right. And then that's what's going to carry you through the whole entire year while you sit around at the cocktail parties. Well, when I did my marathon, it was around, you know, it was around 20 mile. You know, that's when I got the knees, the pain, the blood. And everyone's like, whoa, this guy, he overcame an obstacle. Yeah. That's all we're saying. Like we want to like make a bigger deal out of it than it is, but we're all just a bunch of people going through obstacles, learning about who we are.
I love it. I love it. We'll rewind in a second, but let's go to where you are now. Tell us about Heroes and Horses, how this came about, and what do listeners need to know about this program?
Yeah. So it's really strange how it came about. I was contracting at the time, and, you know, I had reached the, I guess you could say, pinnacle of that world of the third option world. And, you know, a lot of guys in the community want to get to that place. And I had been gone a lot between both careers as a contractor and in the SEAL teams, like combined. You know, I spent over 1,100 days deployed just in combat zones. And so over 13 different deployments that I did in many countries, primarily Afghanistan, but some other spots too. And I was exhausted. I was tired. And I just called up my wife one day and from Afghanistan on Skype. And we had an idea about moving out west. And I said, when I get back, like, let's just move. She's like, okay. Like, I was like, just find a place on Craigslist, go buy a trailer. How true this story is that she went and got a trailer, had no idea how to ride it. When it came back, was parked all crazy on the road and had like tickets because she couldn't turn it. She just went and got it and drove it straight. I got to give it to her. Like, and so I came home, you know, we hung out for a couple of days and then we packed up and on day four we left. And I got a house on Craigslist and just went out, and just next thing I know, I'm living in the middle of nowhere in Montana. And I knew I needed a change in my life. I was getting ready to kind of like transition out, and I did two more deployments after that. And I'll talk a little bit more about that. But that first year that I had moved here was really hard because I didn't know anybody. I didn't know anybody. We just moved out here. So we're living in this like kind of weird neighborhood. It's all like Dutch farmers. I come showing up. I got like long hair, tattoos, covered in beards, like a pregnant wife that's in a bikini all the time. You know, total, just like total teams, just total teams. I'm like tatted up. I'm like drinking a beer out there, like high powered chainsaw, cutting like a twig. And I just remember all the neighbors like in this like very conservative neighborhood see me. I'd be wearing my Ranger panties. I'd be like, hey, what's up, brothers? And they'd be like, and they'd close their garage. Everyone had the same cars. And so anyway, I was pretty lonely and isolated. And I talk about this in my TED Talks, but actually like that summer was my life started kind of to come into, mm-hmm. it started becoming a lot more focused of why I had arrived at that point. And I had this garden and I planted a bunch of seeds, and long story short, I had little starter seeds and they started growing up, and all I wanted to do was hurry up and get this done. So I kept brushing the dirt away, from them, and I killed hundreds of these seedlings. And I was really disappointed in it because I'd wonder what I had done wrong. And in that moment, I had this exact thought, which was funny at the time, but I have since, it's very often I think about this. And it is, maybe I helped them to death. Maybe I had helped them to death. Maybe I had took away the very thing that those plants needed to grow, right? They needed to develop the strength for the environmentals, for what the world was going to prepare for them. And me, you know, daddy plant, wanted to make it a little bit easier. And what I did was I destroyed them. And I started thinking about, you know, my kids. I started thinking about life. And I am a thinker. That's just kind of how my mind works. And I remember thinking about, to this day, I still think about when I deal with guys in the program, and I think, am I helping them to death? Am I doing too much? Right? Am I doing too much? I know I want to help him. Guy's crying. The guy's broken. The guy's detoxing. The guy's got all this stuff on. His wife's left him. He's broke. He's homeless. He's living in a car. And even in the midst of all that, I have to be careful I don't help him too much. Mm. They have to learn to help themselves. And so, and does that mean you sustain losses? Absolutely. But that is a part of the growth cycle of life. And I embrace that. So I ended up going hiking. I left like in randomly got a map from REI, went with my little daughter, went on this big hiking trip. I ended up meeting some cowboys out there who in the backcountry, strange, no idea. I just went to a place, a very rugged place. And I started working on their ranch. I started kind of reconnecting with horses. I grew up in a really small town, you know, 600 people upstate New York. I worked on and off on a dairy farm and did a lot of that kind of stuff, haying and all those things. I had a horse, but I was no horseman. I just had one. And like it was a lawn ornament. And I started really like these guys that I had met were actually like kind of bad people. And there were drunks and there were alcoholics and they were wild cowboys, wild. And so right away, you know, I could barely like ride a horse. They're putting me on horses. I'm getting bucked off all the time. I've got some scars in my body. I'm kicked and I started shoeing horses. And I actually kind of hated horses, like, cause everything I ever did with them, I would just get in a fight with them like constantly. And this guy would buy horses that would be taken to slaughter in Canada. He'd buy them up there, bring them back, buy them for like $100 and try to train them, right? But his training methods were not like matter of fact, if anybody ever saw those training methods, real old school, hardcore, harsh, force, fear, repetition, like on the horse, you're basically creating slaves out of these horses. And then he'd resell them as, you know, as a kid's horse, make a bunch of money on them, whatever. So I was just a mindless bag of meat to him and to these other guys. But through that process, strangely enough, like I started riding in the mountains. I started packing in the mountains. I began to like learn about myself, and I began to realize that I was the cause of all these problems because I was just trying to dominate the situation constantly. And the horses had a huge impact on me. And I ended up inviting some special forces guys out that were friends of mine that were in a really bad way. And I was getting ready for a deployment. They came out for 2 weeks. My friend was in a really bad way. Matter of fact, I remember sitting in his tent in the backcountry of Montana. He kept pulling his gun out, you know, and kept spinning it around, and he kept saying things. And I was just sitting there thinking, like, dude, like, this guy is in a, like, I didn't know it was going to go down, but I was like ready for anything the whole time. And he was on, you know, psych meds and had all, you know, really dark place. Well, he ended up coming off all that stuff, and like, by the end of the 2 weeks, we had basically bonded as like really a close band of brothers. And it was horrible. If you watched it on a video, you would be like, this is the most sad thing I've ever seen. These dudes are just falling off, die like in the wild, grizzly bears, like snowstorms. And we emerged, we did it again. And that's when I started realizing that so many of my friends that are living in isolation and living this, like, they're professional veterans, they're living this hybrid life. You know, they think that the unit's going to call them up and they're going to be, you know, one last op, you know, a couple beers, like, oh, I think the command's got a couple things, you know, take a look at. You're like, can't even walk up a flight of stairs anymore. I'm like, it's like, dude, they don't even make multicam to fit you anymore. So, there be like a whoopee. You're wearing a whoopee. So war whoopee. And I just, I started realizing that it's actually struggle that was giving us value. Like and that's why you see that in a lot of our stuff. I wrote that down, that struggle is what's giving everything in life value. And everything out there for vets is designed to take the struggle away. It's trying to make it easier. It starts helping them to death. Right. So that's, you know, that really led to the inception in 2014. I created Heroes and Horses. I took my own money. I filed the paperwork. I did it in my living room. I didn't get an attorney or any of that stuff. Filled it all out, filed it up. And then I put up a crappy website. I still remember I used this platform called Nation Builder. It's the biggest ripoff. Like, and it was like, it looked like a government website that was going to come and like give you a rectal exam. Like, it was the worst thing. And I was like, I put it up there, and every day I was like wondering why like the money wasn't like rolling in. Like, I was like shocked. I was just like thinking like, hey man, I'm like trying to like help people. I started like doing a lot of research after that and realizing there's 45,000 nonprofits in North America for vets, just for vets. $8 billion were spent last year, governmental and non-governmental money on vets. 12.7% of veterans are unemployed right now compared to the national average. October's 2019 rates were 3.9% in the nation. Right. So by the end of 2020, since 2005, if it stays on track, which it's getting worse, as the Washington Post reported last month, 138,000 vets will have killed themselves since 2005. So you've got now 1 in 6 vets are on more than 2 psychiatric based medications. And all you Googlers out there, Google it. I have dug really deep to find out the number of guys on suicide that are on meds. And I think there's a big correlation. I'm looking like, wow, there's an entire generation going bye-bye. Why is nobody talking about it? Everyone wants to take you cycling with Clay Walker and take you on a canoe ride in the Adirondacks and put a picture. Everyone thinks everyone's an amputee. There's only 1,600 amputees. I'm not saying like that's not a lot. I mean, that's a lot, but it's not. But the perception is that every guy's an amputee and has a service dog. And so I started looking. I was like, wow, there's like a, this is like, if we were talking about like, you know, they recalled 3-wheelers in 1984 when 100 people had been killed and 300 people had been injured. They recalled them. Hundreds of thousands of vets will have soon killed themselves. We're not recalling the system. It's the next new drug. It's the next new this. It's the next new that. We're helping them to death. If you look at the Native American population here, especially in Montana, we gave them everything. So we gave them subsidized food, which they get, subsidized health care, free houses, subsidized homes. We gave them alcohol, and they killed themselves, because you cannot live without a purpose. Mm. And you can't live without struggle. You can't. You can't live without it. So I started learning all this. I started really, like, when I first started the program, I didn't know as much as I know now. And I remember, you know, I talked about in that 180 out video, the first season I got, I did this, I raised 62 grand. The rest of it I paid for with all my own money. I brought 24 vets out, and I didn't even have the money to finish this three-phase program. The way I had it set up at the time was very complicated. I'm at the airport. I'm waiting, nothing, no show. The next day I get a call from the wife. The husband went in the bathroom and shot himself in the bathroom with the wife and daughter in the house, killed himself. And I was like, I was stunned. Like, and then the guys that I showed up at this, so then I pick a guy up from the airport, total heroin addict, right? Delta Airlines calls me. First of all, I'm thinking I'm like taking vets on pack trips. Like, you know, I'm like all fired up, like learning about the horse. I'm like, these dudes show up. One guy detoxed on heroin. He's the guy chopping wood in the 180 out video. Very dark. And he works on a ranch today. So, but there's guys that were alcoholics, guys that have been blown up, guys that had TBI, had a green beret, been shot in the face. So like, I started realizing this. And then there was a guy there who the DA was experimenting with nerve blocking the parasympathetic and sympathetic nerve system. So he had no fight or flight, right? So he had a nerve block in his parasympathetic. So I didn't know this. And there's a scene where we're running all those horses and he's standing there. We have about 100 horses stampeding towards him, and he does not get out of the way. He just stands there like he's like watching somebody on a, you know, computer screen, like, and I'm like, get out of the way. Like, here they come. Like, luckily the horses like went around him. He stood in the midst. I rode over to him. I started kind of yelling. I'm like, dude, you could have been killed right now. Like, could have been in your life. He's like, I just didn't feel like afraid. I was like, What do you mean feel afraid? And he tells me. So that first year that I did this, I got a real hard lesson in what the problems are out there. And since then, today, the organization is the longest and the most difficult program in North America for veterans. Mm. It's struggling 101. Every guy that leaves after the 40 days, so it's 40 days and 40 nights, it's whole food eating. So there's no dairy, there's no carbs, there's no juice, there's no, you know, honey. It's water and coffee, meat and vegetables for 40 days straight. They'll ride, you know, between 400 and 500 miles on their horses in the backcountry. They'll learn how to shoe horses. They'll read books. They'll go through a philosophy course. They'll wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning every day and do PT when they're in camp. And it all is just a tool so that they can learn how to mine for who they are. And without that process, if I sold them a bunch of my ideas, it would never work, because when they left, so would the ideas. And so they have to find change and purpose on their own two feet. And no matter what their situation and circumstances, we put them in the face of more adversity. So contrary to what everybody thinks, like, oh, these veterans are going to snap like a bunch of breadsticks, like they're PTS, they're freaking out, like they can't take it, like they're going to go crazy. It's quite the opposite. They grab on to that, those remaining flickers of light of who they are as a person, that original thought. And they realize that there's only two choices, either I accept this or I don't accept this. Mm. I can't do this or I won't do this. And it's not about making cowboys or outfitters. It's a high pressure medium. The horses, the horse human relationship, the mountains, the environmental challenges, constant barrage of new things constantly shows these guys that what they're really looking for in life, what we're all looking for in life, is not outside of us. Mm-hmm. It's not. And it's not a nebulous thing. It's on the inside. It's on the inside, but we always get to the end of someone else's ideas. I told a guy that came through, he had a master's degree in psychology. I told him, he's out there crying. We're in Wyoming. Like, it's like, it was brutal. It was hard. I'm out there. I'm a vet. I think everyone forgets that. And it was like, they're out there and he's like, you know, why are we out here? And he's like really upset and it's freezing cold. And we've been out there for 5 days, just living in the mud with horses, removing these cows. And he's like, this is like the hardest, this is the worst thing I've ever done in my life. And I was like, well, what do you want to know? And he said, well, what are we doing out here? I said, we're moving cows. He's like, I know that. He said, but why? And I said, so that we can find out that you're an absolute wimp of a person. And he kind of looked at me and I said, but the good news is now is your opportunity to grow right now. And I said, there's no other way out but through. That's it. Like, what are you going to do right now? And we rode back together, back to this little cow camp that we had. And he says, you know, I got a master's degree in psychology from Purdue. And I said, yeah, do you think that works? And he said, well, yeah. And I said, well, it's not working on you. And I said, this is the problem. I said, we get master's degrees in other people's ideas. Mm. I said, but you're a first grader in you. I said, you know what? You're acting like a first grader. It's to be expected. And I said, I'm here to get you every step of the way. That guy is becoming a veterinarian today. He had wrote a suicide note. He had wrote a suicide note, brought it with him, took out an insurance policy for his wife, wrote a suicide note, was going to kill himself. And this was the last ditch ever. He saved himself. I'm not here saying like, oh, I'm so great. I'm like saving vets or anything like that. I'm like, no, I'm helping vets save themselves. And that's why it works. And that's why it can't be replicated. You know, people like, I always see people like trying to like rip off stuff. Like, yeah, we're helping vets find purpose. Like, da-da-da. It's like, you're only going to find that in the face of adversity. When everything is gone and everything is, there's no cell phones. There's no social media. There's no like likes and hearts. There's no therapists that are telling you to do this and go to the grocery store and you can overcome. Like, you're out there and you're suffering and it's raining for days and then horses and bears and everything that's happening in the responsibility that you have, that's who you are. How you are in those situations is who you are.
One thing that comes to mind, there's a book, The Way of the Superior Man by David Data. And he talks about one of the phrases that stuck with me from that book is the masculine finds purpose in austerity and through austerity and challenge. And as I'm picturing this incredible program, I'm just in awe of this program you've put together that is the epitome of that, like austerity. Like, you've got coffee, water, meat, vegetables. You are removing, you're stripping everything that we use to numb ourselves, sugar, TV, cell phones, right? You're stripping out the things that we use to collapse and hide and escape. And then you're introducing challenge of 4 a.m. workouts and cold and rainy and out there and just not having an escape. And I can imagine in that environment, like that is the nutrient that these people, that all of us need. You're just letting the seed there and you're introducing this austerity and challenge, and people are growing in the direction that they are. They're growing in a direction that's aligned with the people that they are deep down. But I love this approach because it seems like you're stripping people down to the bedrock of who they are. You're allowing people to strip themselves down to who they are and who they've forgotten that they are. And I love that quote. I mean, there's so many great quotes you've got, but I love that around that we have master's degree in other people's idea, but a first grader in you. And you're giving them that space. And 40 days honestly seems about right. Like 40 days to become familiar of who they are and who they want to become. And it's really incredible.
You know, I go through the program with the guys. I used to do all the classes. Now I do one class start to finish, and then I teach leadership at night with these guys. You know, it's 4 a.m., 10 p.m. every night. It's very, and then in the backcountry, you know, that's like, who knows. But I go through it every time. And I really, so, you know, I've got my own challenges in life. And, you know, people think that like, oh yeah, I'm running the program. Everything's great. I got it all figured out. I'm living my life too. And, you know, I'm a vet and, you know, I've had my ups and downs and all the things that I've been through, but the one thing is nothing stifled me. nothing stopped me from growing. A lot of guys come here, they have sleep issues, the big sleep issues, and it's from the war and they're disabled for their sleep issues or whatever. And I'm like, hey, you're 75 pounds overweight. You drink Monster energy drinks all day. You smoke cigarettes. You chew Copenhagen. You eat candy. You live like shit. You do. You are destroying yourself. And then you want to blame it on the war that you were in 10 years ago. I'm just saying, let's start there. Well, when guys lose 30 pounds in this program or 40 pounds, the average guy loses 18 pounds in this program. And they're waking up at 4 o'clock in the morning, working hard, physical fitness, all these things. I never have anyone trouble with sleep issues. Never. Zero. I have trouble getting guys up. They're physically exhausted. And that's great because that's a good learning environment. And when you're really tired, you become very receptive to things. And my thing is like, hey, let's just start there. I always tell guys like, well, have you lost the weight? Have you quit Copenhagen? Have you quit cigarettes? Have you stopped drinking coffee? Have you stopped Monster energy drinks? You create a sleep environment. Are you using your phone in bed? You've got Wi-Fi signals zooming around everywhere. Do you have a dark room? Do you go to bed at the same exact time? Whoa. That's a lot of struggle. Maybe I'll just take this Ambien and Valium, little protocol from the VA. It's the war. It's the easy way. And the easy way kills you. Every time. Lipitor and donuts, 4 a.m. and running shoes. The easy way kills you. It's so enticing, but it kills you. It kills you from, it's a slow death. And then we got to get more YouTube videos, more Ranger videos, more SEAL videos, more inspirational obese people running marathon videos, more obstacle course race videos to get that fixed because we're not living our struggles. So we got to live somebody else's because we need that. Need that.
I know we've only got a couple minutes left here. I have two questions. One is how can listeners support you?
The biggest thing for us is raising money. It costs us $19,000 to put a guy through this program for 9 weeks long because there's a follow-on internship that they go to and they graduate the 40 days. So then they go on for another 4 to 6 weeks. So that's cheap. Put it in perspective. There's a nonprofit right here in my town that for 5 days is $38,000 per guy. Go look at the 990s. Go look at people's financials. See what they're spending their money on. For us, this year we're raising $608,000, but 32 guys through 9 weeks. So that's go online, donate, come out and volunteer, spread the word. At Heroes and Horses on Instagram, our website. We have a gala November 16th here in Bozeman. We're auctioning off, helicopter hog hunting in Texas with SEALs, Mexico bow hunting with different operators. We've got, silent live auctions, Saturday Night Live tickets. We've got all kinds of stuff. So if you want to get involved in that, go on our website. But we ultimately, we're supported by the public. We don't have any grants. It's people from around the country that believe in what we do. So it doesn't happen in a vacuum. It happens with people getting behind and getting involved and trying to truly understand the issue. So if you want to know more about the issues, you can go to our website, heroesandhorses.org.
And I'll put links for listeners at beyondtheuniform.org to all of these things, to be able to donate, to be able to volunteer, lots of different ways. I think that listeners will agree with me. This is a man and a cause that you want to get behind. And just last question. I know we've got maybe 5 minutes left here, but I always like to leave the last question open-ended, and I love the amount of ground that we've covered. I'm sure there's things that we haven't talked about. So either what have we not talked about you want to make sure listeners know, or what are some final words of wisdom you'd like to leave with listeners?
So I'll share a personal story. One thing I realized this year is I've been like, I want to grow this program. I want to get this out there. I feel, our ultimate goal is to get in front of the Health and Human Services and begin to collect data, which a process, which I didn't talk about, called uninterrupted data. So we're developing quantifiable and quantitative data of each soldier that comes through this program. And I want to do that so that I can start to change things at the policy level. right? And start to have a true shift where there can be a different option for them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in my own life, we're a small business. I bust my butt. I don't make crap compared to any for-profit business. And I'm always on social. I'm always doing these things. I'm always trying to inspire. I'm always posting these pictures. And I realized how much time. So I started keeping track of all the time I was like wasting on there and my own personal. So I'd built my personal social media up to 17,000 or whatever it was, or 16,000 followers or something. And so last week I decided that I didn't say anything. I didn't say anything to anybody. I realized that was something that I could control in my life that was wasting my time. Mm-hmm. And so I just, out of the blue, I just deleted it permanently. And everybody's like been texting me like, dude, like you did it. Like, and the reality of it is that when you fill yourself up with other people's ideas and you live vicariously through other people's lives and you judge your life according to other people all the time, that it breeds negativity. It wastes your time and it detracts you from learning who you're supposed to become. And honestly, it was a very hard thing for me to do. And I remember I sat there and I was like, warning, like this can never like come back or whatever. Mm. And I was like, and I remember I just pushed that button because my final word of wisdom is, what good is truth if you do nothing with it? Mm. Like, what good is truth if you do nothing wicked? And that's been something that's been on my heart for the past week or 2 weeks. We listen to these podcasts, people, healthy eating, things we got to do. We got to clean up our diets. We got to get off drugs. We got to get off substance. We got to get off addiction. We got to get off the socials. We got to stop hanging out at the bars, negative self-talk, all these things. But what good is truth if you do nothing? That's just another time waster. Truth becomes a time waster because you do nothing with it. And I said to myself, I turned 40 this year, last month. And I said, I'm going to start doing something with the truth that I find. Like, I'm going to start really doing something with it because this life is going to come and it's going to go. And it's a special occasion. It's a special occasion. And you better enjoy this moment. And it's up to you what it will become. Mm.
Micah, thank you so much for the work that you're doing for our community. Thank you. The message that you're putting out to the world, I think it's sorely, sorely needed, especially right now. And I appreciate the generosity of your time and sharing your message with our audience.
Thanks so much, Justin. Appreciate it. Surface.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Quick couple admin points. We release brand new episodes every single Monday and Thursday. Those are usually recorded about a month or so before they go live. Every Monday and Thursday, we have an interview, usually almost always with a military veteran about their civilian career. More and more, we're starting to add in experts who may not be veterans, but may have some expertise that will help the military veteran community. Saturdays, I typically post more of a behind the scenes episode, which is a free form format. I try to use what I'm calling a mullet format. And by that, I mean business up front, party in the back, talking through admin points, professional topics related to the podcast. It might be a conversation I had that week. It might have been an interview I had that week, but just trying to share things that are top of mind that may help you in more of a free form, straight from the heart format. And then the party in the back is the personal side of things, just kind of more free-flowing thoughts on life, on improving oneself, just kind of whatever's going on in life and trying to be authentic and honest about those things as well. Special thanks. We have an all-volunteer army of people behind Beyond the Uniform making this possible. We do this on our lunch breaks, on our evenings, on our weekends, because we love the military community. We want to give back. We want to make a difference. We want that as part of the purpose in our life that we valued in the military. So special thanks to Steve Bain. Steve does pretty much everything. He helps secure guests. He does our newsletter. He keeps the reels rolling and keeps me sane. Kathleen Dillon, the first person to join our team, she writes text transcripts of every single episode. It's wild. She keeps up with two of these a week despite a demanding career and education right now. But those transcripts help us get more SEO value, helps her audience more. Andrew Woolridge is our data guru. He helps us understand the numbers, which is the easiest way for us to figure out how we can better support you, and adds kind of the data oversight for that. Rick Healy does all of our social media. He is gaining more and more of an audience for us by getting our videos, getting our podcasts out on social channels. The best way to stay in contact with us is if you go to beyondtheinformed.org, there is a newsletter. You'll have a little pop-up that comes up. You can put your email in. We email twice per month. We try to be respectful, but it is a great way to get appraised of upcoming events, upcoming interviews, promos where companies are giving discounts to Beyond the Uniform listeners, and more. This does cost money to put on. We are committed to not charging veterans directly, and the way that we kind of offset costs is through corporate sponsors. So if you know of a company that would like to get in front of a military audience and their families, that's one way that we can both add value to our members but also offset the costs of Beyond the Uniform and give us a little bit of budget to start expanding what we're doing. So that's the best way you can help us. If that's not something that you can do, a positive review on iTunes is greatly appreciated. Have a wonderful week. We will be back Monday, Thursday, and Saturday with more interviews. And keep up the listening. Take care.